Hello, Vancouver.
Yeah, we're all you were. I think if they would have lost to Ottawa, I think the tone of your visit today would be a lot different than it is today.
Yeah, it might have been, but you know, to be honest, we're only a loss away from more craziness.
It's true. Now, that was a lot of our show and pregame show yesterday was talking about the feel of the market and the pressure. Yep. and the rumblings. And I know that you and Sat had talked on the weekend, and there was a lot of people talking about, hey, what is next for this franchise if there's another bottom to be hit this week?
Look, I really believe, and I do believe it, that there's nothing imminent. I really don't. This season creates a lot of challenges simply because of the logistics of it. I believe that, you know, their plan is for Jim Benning to be the GM, and I don't think there's anything that has led me to believe that that's going to change. You know, I know that, you know, some people were unhappy about what I said on TV on Saturday night. Don't make panic moves. I really believe that. I think that when you make panic moves, especially now, you can't, you know, you can send yourself on a situation where you can't recover. And, you know, I think that you only have one choice in this COVID year, and that is to either completely give up or just march into the headwind and deal with it as best you can. And I don't think the Canucks are completely giving up, nor should they. And so I think they're going to try to march into the headwind and solve it themselves. Now, there's a couple defensemen out there I wonder about. Victor Mete in Montreal. I'm wondering, Dermott's a scratch tonight in Toronto. You know, and Vince Dunn in St. Louis, who I think is available. He comes with a longer quarantine, obviously. You know, I don't know the answer to all this. I'm sure that the Canucks are looking around to see if there's some help they can get, but there's no guarantees you're getting it. I think your only choice is to just say, you know what, this is our group, this is what we've got, and we're going to try to make it work.
Well, and the reality of trying to go after guys like that, and I'm sure, you know, you're going to be trying to improve the defense going after guys like Mete and Vince Dunn, but what do you think the cost is to get that done? Like, I know you can't give a perfect price on what it's going to take, but what do you think those teams are looking for? Is it a player or is it more draft picks / prospects?
Well, I heard that one of the things St. Louis was looking at was a first rounder. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get it, but, you know, they're going to look for it. So they have a high price on it. I don't know. Like, I'm not even convinced. I know Toronto had some Dermott discussions last year. Like, there was Todd. I think Florida had interest in him. But I obviously it didn't go anywhere, and I don't know where they are right now, if they're even looking at it. I just know that he's a scratch tonight. Mete's situation, I'm not sure what's going on there in terms of Montreal's will to move him, but he's a good player who can't get into the lineup on a good team, and he obviously wants to play. You know, the Canadians are smart enough to know that putting him on waivers, you're losing him for nothing. So, like, I don't think the price would necessarily be as high as Dunn, but it would still be something. I could see Mete in particular being of interest to Vancouver. I think he's making $735 this year or something like that. But in some ways, that may only increase his trade value. So, you know, Sat, like, I'm not convinced that that kind of help is coming. I'm sure they're looking at it. But, you know, you may just have to deal with what you've got.
Well, I think you're right about that. Like, in terms of whatever you have on the ice, whatever you have in the coaching staff, but also whatever you have in management, if you're looking at it from a pragmatic standpoint, you can't really do major surgery until the offseason anyways, Elliot.
I agree with that, Sat. But I just simply think that at the beginning of the year, the plan was this is our group for this year, like in terms of management and coaching. And I don't think they have any real desire to change it. I think, look, is everybody thrilled with the way the season started? Hell no. Is everybody as frustrated as a lot of your fan base is? I'm sure they are. But that doesn't mean you can throw the baby out of the bathwater, particularly this year. You have to ride it a little bit. And I think that's what the plan is going to be. Like I'm obviously not in Vancouver, and although I have some friends who live there, and you know, they were telling me that, you know, there was talk about are they going after this candidate, they're going after this candidate, they talked to this person, they talked to that person. I could be proven wrong on this. I've been wrong on things before, but I don't get the sense that that's happening. I don't see it anywhere. So I really think that the plan was, we're going to ride out this year and see where this year goes and then make some decisions. And, you know, I think that there's certain tells about your team. What do you know? That you're not looking to give anybody long-term contracts. That's why Markstrom's not here. That's why Tanev's not here. That's why Green hasn't been extended. I just think that's your philosophy right now. You know, we're not giving away term. We're going with what we've got, but we're backing this group for this year. And again, I could be proven wrong, but I think that's what the plan is. And I don't think you change your plan over two rough weeks. Now you might start thinking, okay, what does this mean for the future? But I don't think you're rushing into anything right now. It's just, it's not the way smart things are done.
Well, and it's probably not the year for it, and this would be my sense, Elliot, and it kind of reiterates what you said there, but even, it's not just Vancouver, it's around the league. There are going to be teams in this 56-game season that things just don't go their way, and they come out of the gates and they realize, hey, like, we're probably not going to make the playoffs or reach our goals this year. But it's not like we're going to see, hey, like, if there was fans in the building last night, there would have been a lot of nervous energy, and they got down, and you know, you would have seen fire-bending chants or stuff like that. You're not going to see that moment around the NHL. It's not like fans are going to stop buying tickets because there are no tickets to buy. If there was ever a year for whichever team to just say, well, you know, it is what it is, let's just get through this and do our best to evaluate, this is the year for it. And I know that would make, you know, Canuck fans happy, and hopefully it doesn't get to that. But there's going to be instances like that around the league.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like, look, like, you know, the one thing that I know the teams are worried about this year, Andrew, is that because of the challenges of this year, if you play poorly, is your team going to pack it in? If you run into trouble, is your team going to say, you know what, this isn't any fun this year? When we go on the road, you know, we can't go anywhere. I don't want this. So we've seen the Canucks have a bad 10 days to open the season, but I didn't see a team last night that looked like it was giving up. Like, you know, in the first couple of shifts, Matt Murray had to make some really good saves before the house, you know, caved in on him. And you guys kept going. And, you know, when they scored, it could have, like, if you go back to Saturday night, like, that was a night, I watched that game on Saturday, and I'm thinking, that's a night where the fans changed the game.
When it's 2-2, yeah.
Yeah, the fans are going bananas, and you and the players are on their edges, and the building's going crazy. You know you have that game. And because there's no fans there, Montreal can reset and not panic, and they win. Like last night when Ottawa scored, again, you guys could have fallen apart. Like the game was still close at that point, and you didn't. You did quite the opposite. And to me, like that's a sign. Like you guys aren't done. You have your challenges, but that was a game you had to have, and you won it. And now what you have now is two more games you have to have. On, you know, tomorrow and Thursday. But, like, that said to me that you guys aren't done yet. Like, your players aren't packing it in. They still think they have runway, and they're competing. And that's important. Now you just got to get your first line going.
Elliot, one of the big storylines kind of, and it hasn't gotten as much run because of all the heat in Vancouver and the team getting off to a rough start, but, and I know you talked about this during the 31 Thoughts podcast with Jeff Merrick and also on Sportsnet 960 in Calgary, but Elias Pettersson switching agents, it's a pretty big deal. I mean, he's going to CAA hockey, which obviously Pat Persson is a part of. That's where Quinn Hughes is. And we know how big the number is going to be for these guys in a year.
Yep.
How significant is this? Can you tell our listeners how big of a deal this could potentially be here for the long term?
Well, I think it's significant because, you know, obviously of who Pettersson is and the situation it's in. But people don't change their agents because they're happy with the way things are going. Mm-hmm. And so whatever was going, whether it was talks, no talks, what the offers were or weren't, obviously Pettersson was not comfortable with it. So, you know, I don't know how far they'd really gotten. I would suspect not very far. But whatever the case, you know, Pettersson wasn't happy with it. And I think that's the only – and that doesn't mean that you can't make a deal. You know, the two agents involved, Pat Persson and J.P. Barrie, those guys have done plenty of deals with the Vancouver Canucks, including the two greatest players in franchise history, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean that it's a disaster. But what it does mean is that whatever landscape the Canucks were looking at before has changed. You know, one of the things that I always remember was Shea Weber changed his, and I don't, this is going to cause hysteria, and I don't mean for it to. Shea Weber changed his agents in Nashville right before he signed that massive offer sheet with Philadelphia. And I just remember what a GM told me after that. He always said, whenever a player changes an agent, you have to get on it right away. Because we can ask on sports radio what this means, but in a lot of ways, we're probably guessing. The team can't afford to guess. They have to know what it means right away. And I'm sure if the Canucks didn't already know, and they may have based on, you know, kind of the timeline I'm hearing here, I'm sure they're in touch and saying, okay, you know, what exactly does this mean here? And where are we going in the future? Now, as of this morning, the new paperwork had not been filed yet with the Players Association, but it's coming. And, you know, we'll see at that time. I just think that whatever the landscape was before SAT, it's different now.
Well, of course. And my question here is, and you mentioned you got to get on this pretty quickly. There's a number of things to unpack here. Number one, is this the time ownership is going to feel comfortable giving out a big contract to begin with? What type of, mm-hmm. you know, authority is Jim Benning going to have in these negotiations, considering the financial realities? I mean, you know, like, maybe they might want to do something quickly, CAA does, but, you know, we're not sure if the Canucks are going to be ready to do something quickly.
You know, the way I look at that is this. There's no way. Let's just say that Jim Benning had the, if you ranked all 32 GMs in the NHL and you said, this is the GM with the most authority to this is the GM with the least. Even if Jim Benning was number one on that list, that he had the most authority of any GM in the National Hockey League, you're not signing Elias Pettersson without ownership approval. Mm-hmm. It's just too big a deal and too important a player. So anybody out there who thinks that Jim Benning would get to do this without talking to his owner, it's craziness. Like that, the world just doesn't work that way. Like I'll tell you something. One of the stories I heard when Ray Shiro was GM of the Pittsburgh Penguins and had won a Stanley Cup, one of the things in his contract was he could do what he needed to do with the roster and trade players except two particular players. And that, of course, was Crosby and Malkin. Like, anything he wanted to do with Crosby and Malkin, not that he would have traded them, but even if he wanted to, it was expressly in his contract that he had to run that through ownership. And, you know, the idea that any GM can do whatever they want independent of owners, that's just not the way life is anymore. So, like, anything that happens with Pettersson's deal, ownership is going to be involved. And it's not like Jim Benning is going to be prevented from signing Pettersson because of ownership. I mean, I just think that whole idea is nuts. It's simply that ownership would be involved in it. And look, I just don't think that if Pettersson wants to sign in Vancouver, like, that's going to be a problem. Like, he's the cornerstone. Everybody knows that.
Elliot Friedman joins us for Maui Jim Sunglasses. The view is better from here. And to complicate things further, and I'm sure it's all, again, we don't really know the answers, but it's all tied in. This all comes as Pettersson is having just a miserable start. And even last night, it's a big win for the team, and everyone kind of breathed a bit of a sigh of relief. But Pettersson was no better. He didn't get on the score sheet last night. You know, it was kind of the same story last night, and now we're watching to see if his passes are connecting in warm-up. I mean, that's the point we've gotten to here.
Well, yeah, there's no question that when, you know, we have a situation like this, that's the great thing about being a hockey reporter in Canada, guys, is that people really care and we're expected to have answers, so we look for every little thing. You know, there's something, like the whole thing I look at now is that there's something there that's mental. And the reason I say that is he doesn't look right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, when Pettersson's had bad games before, he still looks a certain way. Even when he's getting run over and mugged like he has been at times, he projects cool. You know, like, I remember there's a guy who wrote for Sports Illustrated. His name was Phil Taylor. He always talked about how the coolest athlete of all time was Dr. J, Julius Erving. And he always, no matter what happened to him, he always looked cool. And I remember really liking that column and really thinking about it. And I kind of equated that with Pettersson, and I think in a lot of ways Hughes. You know that there's something wrong when they don't look composed. And remember, we saw those looks from Hughes on the bench last year in the Vegas series. And the reason it was so different was because you don't normally see him like that. Now, I'm watching Pettersson right now, and, you know, like it's weird to me. He's not himself. He looks off. He's not the same. Now, you know, Ian McIntyre, I thought, made a really interesting point that, you know, maybe he's got something on his mind, like the agent switch, and that has affected him. Maybe there's something else. I don't know. Like, there's a guy I follow on Twitter. His name is Corey Schneider. His Twitter handle is Shutdown Line. And I really go through his work because he's very patient about tracking things. Like, he tracks its zone entries and zone exits. And the reason I like it is it tells me if what I look for is trends. Like, is a player doing what they normally do, or is there something different than what they normally do? In the first six games of the year, Pettersson had just 5 offensive zone exits with possession. That is way low for him. And at the beginning, I thought he had so much chemistry with Miller last year, and Miller was out because of the COVID. And, you know, I thought maybe they just took a bit of time to get their chemistry back with no practices together and no exhibition games. Now I'm wondering, guys, if it's more than that. There's something there. Like, he's not, you can't help but look at Pettersson and say he's not right for whatever reason. I hope it's nothing serious. I hope he gets back to being him. But, you know, you guys have watched him as much as anybody else has in the first 2 years of his career. Do you not look at him right now and say, that is not the Pettersson I know, just looking at him?
No, it's not. I mean, based on everything that we've seen in the past, it's not the same. And it really shows how big the mental part of the game is, right, Elliot? And especially for young guys, because I thought Ian also made a great point last night on the postgame show with us. He said his nickname might be the alien, but he's human just like the rest of us. And that's the reality of seeing a kid who's 22 going through stuff like this. And I'm sure actually, like, you know, Michael Deutsch, the guy who had been his agent, he's been with him for a long time. And that's not an easy decision to make when somebody's been supporting you for years, brought you up. And then just when you're about to sign a big contract, you know, you're switching agents. Like, that's not an easy thing to navigate emotionally, I don't think, when you're 22 years old.
No, it's definitely not. Look, like, the toughest thing about it is, you know, when we're in this business, and he's a much bigger star than obviously the three of us are. Well, maybe not Andrew, but definitely you and I, Sat.
Well, I was on Hockey Night before you were, to be fair.
That's right. That's true. But, you know, the thing is that the trade-off you make is that when you're going through difficult times, they happen publicly. Right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, I'm sure that the last thing Pettersson needs right now is everybody picking apart his game. But because of who he is, a Hart Trophy caliber player, because of where he plays in a super intense market like Vancouver, and because of the fact he's an elite pro athlete, you know, that's what happens. And sometimes when you're having like a tough time, you almost need to be able to go to work and just forget about it. And now you go to work and everybody's looking at it. So it's like, it's tough. Like, it's not easy. And, you know, guys, I do believe, and we've talked about this before, the fabric of this team is different. And, you know, we've talked about the Markstrom thing with Pettersson and the Tana thing with Hughes. And I do think that's real. It's not to say that Bo Horvat isn't a great guy who cares, or Alex Edler isn't a great guy who cares, because they are. It's just that you have a security blanket you're used to. Someone in particular you're used to, and they're not there anymore. And I know even, I think some of the Canucks have wondered if that is, you know, something that, in addition to what they lost with those two guys off the on the ice, they lost these guys, you know, Freuds or psychoanalysts off the ice.
Elliot, before we let you go, and I know you wrote about this in the column today, 31 Thoughts, but we saw a blockbuster trade, like an NBA-style trade over the weekend in the NHL, and it was amazing watching you guys kind of break it all down on the fly on Saturday. But there's been like some jokes about it, and it's kind of true, but it does make me wonder. People say, well, you know, Patrick Laine is now in the Winnipeg of America and Pierre-Luc Dubois and the Ohio of Canada. What really changed for these guys in terms of location? Are we any closer to figuring it out, really, you know, what was behind Dubois' insistence on getting out, and is he going to be happy in a place like Winnipeg?
I think he'll be happy in Winnipeg. Like, first of all, his father's there, and if you listened to his father yesterday and the Jets made him available, he talked at length about how the family had a chance to be together last summer, and it was such a great thing for all of them. So I'm not really worried about that. You know, one of the things I said that kind of got a bit out of what I meant was, you know, leaving Columbus for a bigger stage, which is one of the theories out there that one of his teammates had said. I if I could have it over again, Andrew, I'd phrase it as a place where maybe hockey matters a little bit more. And that's not to take shots at Columbus, but some people, and I talked about it on the podcast with Gary Roberts, when Gary Roberts first played, it was in Calgary, intense hockey market. He loved it. When he decided to make a comeback from his neck injury, he wanted to go somewhere quieter. He wanted to try to come back in a place that was not as hot a spotlight, and he went to Carolina. And then after a few years in Carolina, he wanted the hot spotlight back. He wanted where it mattered, and he went to Toronto. I think people go through that. I think that you go through stages where you want a hotter spotlight or a less intense spotlight. And I think that, you know, some of his teammates suspected that Dubois wanted like a stage like Winnipeg's where the spotlight was a bit more intense. Now, I don't think, you know, right now we don't know, and maybe we'll never know, but I think there's a few different thoughts. I think, you know, the Tortorella thing is a factor. I don't believe is the factor. Maybe the bigger stage was a bit of a factor. You know, there were rumors about that he had a disagreement with his teammates. I had people who denied that to me, although I think his teammates were very unhappy with the way he played this year, obviously. And the other one someone suggested to me was that, you know, I think he was worried that if he signed long term and some of their other players left, he'd be trapped in a situation that he didn't want to be in. And so I think between those four variables, Andrew, and maybe a few others, we probably have the complete picture.
Hey, Elliot, thanks for this. We gotta continue on with our Sutter appreciation show here. So we gotta let you go for another week.
You know what? I gotta say that last night, like that was. I know a lot of people made a joke about it, but I'll tell you, when the chips are down, you learn who really cares. You really do.
Well said, Elliot Friedman, 31 Thoughts and Hockey Day in Canada. We'll talk to you next week, man.
All right. Take care, guys.
See you later. Day.